Be doing a fictitious case in which the defendant, Brian Martin, is charged with 3 felony counts of computer crime. Brian was recently employed by a company called RACCO until his forced termination. He has allegedly violated federal law by knowingly and without authorization possessing more than 15 passwords to RACCO computer accounts. In the second and third counts, he is alleged to have intentionally and without authorization accessed two computers used to control civilian and military flights at Springfield International Airport and risked the termination of those flights. We've endeavored to make this presentation as close to actual courtroom events as possible. However, we have taken a few liberties to speed things along since an actual case would take a couple of weeks at least, and the testimony would be quite tedious. So moving things along will be our MC tonight, Simple Nomad. And Nomad, thank you very much.
Yeah, you applaud now. We'll see. Okay, I think the first thing we need to do is we need to go ahead and have the bailiff bring in the defendant. If we can go ahead and have the bailiff bring in the defendant here now. And also, during this presentation, there's going to be obviously points when you have questions, you could do instead of interrupting important testimony. Feel free to raise your hands, and we will send our bailiff out there to get your question written down. It'll get sent up to the judge, who will decide whether it's worth interrupting the trial for your questions. There will be Q&A at the end as well, too. So if you want to, just save your questions for the end, that's fine. Okay? First thing I want to do is I want to go ahead and pretty much introduce everyone so you know who everyone is. Okay, obviously the defendant here, Brian Martin, Brian the script kitty Martin right here, the defendant.
I'm not guilty, man.
I don't know. Don't cry. We went over that. Okay. Down over here, the victim, Richard Thieme, he is the owner of Richard's Air Transport Company. And let's see, where else are our other witnesses here? We have a witness down here. Jack Holleran plays Oscar J. Simpson, the senior system administrator. And then we also, and he's, let's see, who else do we have here? Okay, he's the senior system administrator for the government Reserve Air Transportation Command, based in Springfield. Okay, Springfield, Simpson, okay, all right. Yeah, okay, as far as starting to get into our team here, we have Jesse Kornblum, Special Agent for the Air Force Office of Special Investigations. He will be playing himself. This is what he does for a living. Don Cavender.
I will later.
Also will be playing himself. And in this. In fact, and I think that's great that we do have actual tools of the oppressors here to help do this with us. we have Jonathan Klein, also, who is a expert witness for the defense.
Free Brian.
Yeah, and we have Jennifer Granick, who is the defense attorney, also playing herself. And we have Richard Salgado, he represents the people. Again, another person that works for the government that is here playing themselves. Now, boy, this is going to be tough when it comes to jury time, huh? All right. So we have a few other people that are involved in this. We have Rebecca Bass, who is she is still in chambers, so she's not in here just yet. She is playing the role of Judge Judith Chamberlain Wapner. Okay. And we did have some other people that were going to be involved. We had, who was the other?
Stephen Manson.
Kevin Manson.
We originally had, William DeFoya was going to be involved, was unable to make it. And our original judge, he had to remove himself simply because of specific allegations involving him and the defendant, Kevin. Kevin Manson will not be he will not be able to preside.
Not guilty.
Yeah, well, that should be a whole separate trial in itself. But okay, I think at this point also, before we bring.
Judge.
Bring the jury person. All right, for the jury, what I'm looking for here is, of course, we want to, of course, use the entire crowd as a jury. However, I do want to make sure that the press, if we have any press attendees, if they want to get a good story, if they go ahead and have a seat up here in these six seats up here. So any press people want to come up here and have a seat so you can get a closer look at this? All right, good. We got one sucker person already.
We're looking for people who, like real jurors, know nothing about technology.
Oh, yeah, I got that mixed up. These will be the jurors. You guys are going to be just in the audience. If we can get some more people up here, we do. Okay. Right there. Oh, we have another one right here. Oh, yeah, please, have a seat.
Anybody from law enforcement need a chair?
No.
We got someone volunteering here?
I'm going to exercise my preemptories.
Anyone else? I'm looking for some other people here.
Josh.
Joe, why don't you come on up? Joe Burtnick, marketing guy at Mindview, has been giving me crap all day, so. So you. I don't care. I'm willing to take it. You can sit up here. I need one other spot. Do we have any other people that really think they know what they're. Oh, we got someone over here. Let's go ahead and get a gentleman over here. We need a woman on the thing? Okay, someone who is a female, go ahead and bring a chair up, and you can sit up here as well. We'll make it seven.
Alternative.
Excellent. Obviously, the women are the smart ones of the bunch.
Next time
they hang
out, and the ladies. All rise. Honorable Judge Judith Chamberlain Wapner presiding.
Thank you. Be seated, please. Counsel, it's time for opening arguments. Mr. Salgado.
Thank you, Your Honor. Ladies and gentlemen of the only slightly inebriated jury, I want to thank you for taking the time and energy today to be here to perform one of the most important duties that a citizen of the country can perform for their government, and that is to act as a juror in a case. It's a hard job, and it's a critical job. It's one where you're going to be hearing witness testimony, you're going to be seeing exhibits, you're going to be hearing argument from counsel presenting their competing theories, and from all that, you're expected to come up with the truth. I'm going to try to help you find the truth, as is Jennifer today. The case you're going to hear involved two computer systems that were victims of crime. And you're going to hear about the role of the defendant, Brian Martin, in that crime. It's no small matter. In fact, one of the crimes almost led to the death of men and women who have chosen to serve our country in the military and probably countless innocent civilians right here in Springfield. The two computer systems we're going to talk about that were victimized are both located here in Springfield. One of them is run by an individual here, citizen Richard Thiem, and his company, Richard's Air Transport Company, right here in Springfield. He provides commercial air freight services. You're going to hear from Richard that he had an employee. That is until October 1st of 2001. And that employee's name was Brian Martin, the defendant in this case. Through an unfortunate history of employment problems that ultimately led to his dismissal from Richard's company, we find a sad trail of crime and devastated computers.
Dun, dun, dun.
You're going to hear from Richard that on October 1st, when he fired Brian Martin for various reasons, Brian was not happy with this. He didn't take it well. He became angry. He became belligerent. He threatened Richard. He threatened Ratko. And in fact, you're going to hear that not only from Richard, you're going to hear that from the defendant himself. You're going to hear that subsequently, when the defendant's house was searched by the Bureau and his computer was seized and the hard drive analyzed, that there were passwords found on that machine, a lot of passwords. And you're going to hear that they belonged to Ratko. You're going to hear that there was a password cracking tool on the system. You're going to see output from the tool that shows these passwords in plain text form. You're going to hear Richard tell you that with those passwords, Brian Martin could very easily have carried out his threats and done devastating damage to the employer that he loathed. You're also going to hear about a second computer system, a computer system that is run by the military at our own Springfield International Airport, known as the Reserve Air Transportation Command, otherwise known as RATCOM. You may have noticed a similarity in names between RATCO, the former employer, and RATCOM, the DOD entity at Springfield International Airport. That played an unfortunate role in the series of crimes. You're going to hear the testimony of the computer system at RATCOM, specifically two boxes, two computers, one called Guardian and one called Tower. You're going to hear the system administrator tell you that this is an important series of computers. Tower is a computer that stores a database of all incoming and outgoing flights from Springfield International Airport. Guardian, he will tell you, is a firewall that sort of acts as a barrier between users who would access Tower and Tower itself. It logs attempted access into Tower. And we'll be seeing some of those logs. And in fact, the evidence you're going to hear today shows that on October 23rd, the defendant, through something known as Telnet, accessed Guardian, saw a banner saying, if you're not DOD, you don't belong in the system. He continued on, went into Tower, and did damage. What you will hear is that he modified what's known as a script on Tower, such that every 30 minutes, the database of incoming outgoing flights would be modified such that all entries showing RATCO flights were deleted. You're also going to hear that what the script did was any flight with the name RATCO at all in it, even if it was really RATCOM, was deleted. And as a result, all the military flights were taken out of that schedule. You'll also hear a horrifying story of how this almost led to an air tragedy right here in Springfield. You're going to hear that the logs, the records kept of these accesses to the Tower and Guardian system take it all the way back to the residence of Mr. Brian Martin, the individual who had the motive, opportunity, and was in fact shown to be the party who bombarded Tower and Guardian. From these pieces of evidence and the testimony, you are going to hear that Mr. Brian Martin is guilty of three felonies, one for having all of these passwords and the other two for breaking into Guardian and then again into Tower. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Huh? Thank you, Mr.
I know.
Order. You making fun of me, boy? Bailiff, keep an eye on this one. Thank you, Mr. Salgado. Miss Granick, you're opening.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, this case is about a rush to judgment. Someone accessed a computer called Tower, located at the Springfield Airport, but that someone was not my client, Brian Martin. There's a reason that Brian Martin is here, but that reason is not because he's guilty. Brian Martin is a man of strong opinions, and sometimes even stronger words. He gets into arguments easily, and those arguments can become heated. Now, none of this was a crime, but this explains two antagonistic relationships that he has that explain why he's here before you today. One of these antagonistic relationships was with his ex-employer, Richard Thiem. Now, Mr. Martin worked for Richard Thiem as a security administrator. It was his responsibility to keep that network safe and secure. That security and maintenance of the network included keeping passwords secure as well. Now, you will hear testimony that people need to have passwords that are difficult to guess. If you have a password that's easy to guess, it opens your system up to unauthorized access because someone can go through and guess the password and then use your identity to log on. It's necessary to keep intruders out. And simple passwords like a pet name or a birth date or even a hobby, as we'll see in this case, can be easy to guess and open up a system to a world of possible intruders. Now, there are programs that test the guessability of passwords, and those programs are called password crackers. Now, they're called crackers, but these are neither saltines nor lockpicks. This is a name for a tool that any good security administrator will have. It's a tool that good security administrators need to keep passwords secure and unguessable. Now, for some reason, Mr. Thiem became disenchanted with Mr. Martin's services, and they quarreled. Mr. Martin was fired. Now, the dispute may have been personal. It may have been for other reasons, but no matter, Mr. Martin was fired. And like anyone, he was upset at being fired, and he said some inadvisable things to his friends on IRC. There were other people on IRC as well. Not all of them were friends. Some of them were enemies. Brian Martin had a real enemy on IRC, a person who went by the nickname of Primate, P-R-Y-M-A-T-E. And Primate and Brian Martin also had an antagonistic relationship. They battled on IRC, and they had a very hostile interaction. Primate knew where Brian Martin worked. He knew when he was online. He was a regular denizen of IRC, and he knew what Brian Martin's habits were. He knew that Brian Martin was angry with Mr. Thiem, and he knew that Brian Martin held him in disdain, and he wanted to teach Brian Martin a lesson. The evidence will show that between October 22nd and October 24th, there were actually at least 20 unauthorized connections between the ISP speed bump and the computer Tower. Of these 20 connections, only one of them was traced back to Brian Martin's IP. 19 unexplained connections from somewhere and someone else. Now, the logs that demonstrate this were stored on a machine called Guardian. And Guardian served as a firewall to the Tower machine. Now, the evidence will show that the logs that tell you what happened with Tower are not reliable. Those logs have been tampered with, and you, as members of the jury, can give those logs no credibility whatsoever. There are no untampered logs. There are no pure, pristine logs. Those logs would have been located at the ISP, showing that there was traffic from the ISP going to these computers. That evidence does not exist. Now, whoever tampered with the Tower logs that were stored on Guardian did not delete Brian Martin's IP address. In fact, they left it there. And whoever accessed Tower put a notation in on Tower that said that Brian Martin was the perpetrator. Now, the prosecution, Now, whoever accessed Tower purposefully left behind Brian Martin's IP address and his signature to the crime. The rush to judgment is that because that information is there, it must be Brian Martin, and that he has a motive. But there's somebody else out there with a motive, and that is Primate. And the evidence will show just as much, if not more so, that Brian Martin accessed Tower as that someone else logged into that machine and left behind information that they hoped would lead to this very prosecution of my client here today.
Dun, 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 dun.
Ladies and gentlemen, when you hear all the evidence, I will ask you to return a verdict of not guilty for Mr. Brian Martin. Thank you.
Enough already. Thank you, Ms. Granick. Counsel for the government may now call its first witness, Mr. Salgado.
What we're going to do with the witnesses, just so you understand, we're not going to have them swear in. If you all want to swear at them, that's fine. But we're not going to be having them swear in. We want to try to move this along. So think of this as like a, you know, some type of episode of some big court thing on TV where we just cut right to the, the hot buttons in the testimony. Okay. So a lot of the things where they go over the expert witnesses' capabilities and whatnot, that's kind of been skipped over. Carry on, Richard.
Mr. Richard Thing?
Yes.
We've already been talking for a few minutes while you're testifying, and now that you've had a chance to compose yourself after the emotional outburst you had over the harm committed to the computer, I have a few questions.
I was pretty upset. I'm better now, though. Thank you.
Can you describe to the jury what it is you do?
Yes, I'm CEO of RAPCO, which is Richard's Air Transport, and this very difficult economic environment. We think we've done pretty well. We have about 149 employees. Had about 150, and we provide freight transport services. We move air cargo. We're not UPS, but we're a regional airline. We move it through Springfield Airport.
Do you know a Brian Martin?
Yes, I do.
Is he here in the courtroom?
I'll stipulate.
Well, actually, I would like the witness to point to the defendant using my high-powered laser pointer. I'll let the record show that they've identified me.
So shown.
That's him.
How is it that you know the defendant?
I hired Brian. We have a computer system on which we keep all our plans, our flight schedule, and so on. I didn't know that much about computers myself. I needed help. I needed someone to administer the system. And I'd been hearing more and more on the nightly news about computer security, so I needed somebody to take care of that. So I called a person who's apparently a good friend of both Mr. Martin's and myself, Miss Minell. And she was happy to recommend Mr. Martin to me as she said, "Oh, I think nobody can do the job exactly the way Brian would do it." And so I hired him as system administrator and entrusted him with the security of our system at RATCO, and he agreed to accept employment in that capacity.
Did any of his duties involve RATCOM?
Yes, RATCOM is the organization, the structure that they kind of run Springfield Airlines, and we submit our flight schedules to RATCOM, and they manage those on behalf of Springfield Airport.
All right. Is it Brian, the defendant here, is in charge of the time submitting?
Yes, that was part of his job.
Okay. Does Brian go by any nickname that you know while you were...
Well, I've got an email from Brian from different addresses. One I remember was Roadblock. I got an email from him at roadblock@hushmail.com. So I guess he sometimes is called Roadblock or calls himself Roadblock.
Mr. Thing, what happened on October 1st, 2000?
Today I just as soon forget, to tell you the truth. First of all, I'd gotten some calls from, you call them sysadmins, other people who manage computer systems and other companies, and they said they'd all been hacked. They'd had major intrusions in their systems, and they traced it. They used some kind of trace means to detect the origin or the source of the attack, and they all traced back to me, by which he meant RATCO, that is our IP address or how we're identified on the computer network. It's like a phone number, I understand, and it all came from our IP address. And the only one who had responsibility for that system and who used it was Brian Martin. So I confronted him with this concerns, these complaints, because I understand that's against the law, and you put the whole company at liability.
I object and I move to strike. This evidence is character evidence, which is a prior bad act offered to show that my client has a bad character and is not relevant to the crime charge.
Does he float?
I think it does, Your Honor.
I'll withdraw the question. Mr. Thing, did you take any action on October 1st, 2001 with regard to Brian's staff?
Yes, I did, because I had received the non-phone calls from the non-system administrators that we are no longer discussing. I came in and I was not concerned about the non-events that hadn't happened. Nevertheless, I had sufficient reason to believe that I didn't think Brian ought to be an employee of ours any longer. I was tired of walking past his desk and seeing this EverQuest screen on company time. And so I told him that I thought it was necessary to terminate the relationship with the company, and he would get severance pay. He got a full 48 hours of severance, and he was asked to leave, and he reacted in what I would only characterize as an inappropriate way.
How is that, sir?
Well, the scene that comes to mind is a movie called The Big Lebowski, and there was a Walter Sobchak, and he was yelling at a character named Donnie about this is what happens when you do such and such, and that's the way he said he was going to do to me. He said he was going to put me over the banister, and I would never forget it. He said a lot of other things, and that's about as close to saying them aloud in mixed company as I can get. He was rude. He turned red. His nostrils flared. I don't know if you go ice fishing, but when you pull a big one out of the ice, it flops around. Well, that's kind of the way his face and his eyes were going. I mean, he was just very, 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 very upset, and he said, you're going to regret this, and I'm going to get even with you, he said.
I'd like you to take a look at Exhibit A. Do you recognize this document, sir?
That's my password.
Those are some of the employees that work at RATCO, and those are passwords. There's a list that they use to access the computer. I recognize the names.
Thank you, Mr. Thing. You're welcome.
Thank you. Mr. Thing, when Brian Martin worked for you, was he your security administrator?
He was responsible for computer security.
And was he also responsible for password security?
That would be included in computer security.
Okay. So you expected him to keep your password secure?
I expected him to make sure that the system as a whole was secure, and if that's what that involves, I don't know about that stuff. Then that would be part of it.
Did you knew that Mr. Martin went by the name of Roadblock?
I have received email from him in which he communicated with me directly as Brian, and the return address was Roadblock at hushmail.com.
Do you use IRC, Mr. Thiem?
I'm sorry, do I...
Do you use IRC?
Are you getting a cent?
I'll take that as a no. Now, your relationship with Mr. Martin ended on a sour note, did it not?
It certainly did.
And you were upset with Mr. Martin.
I've never been threatened with being turned over a banister and having someone do to me what he's going to do.
Mr. Thiem.
I would say, wouldn't you be upset if I said that to you?
Mr. Thiem, I'm going to ask you to listen to my question and answer my question. You were upset with Mr. Martin, weren't you?
Yes, I was.
And you're upset with him now, aren't you?
Oh, not particularly. I'm a Christian and I've forgiven him.
I have no further questions for this witness.
Mr. Salgado, would you like to redirect?
No, thank you. I don't think
so. Next witness.
Your Honor, although I'm tempted to close, I need to have a few more witnesses, if I may call to the stand Mr. Oscar J. Simpson.
Respect, Your Honor.
It's liberal.
Why, thank you, Mr. Simpson.
Mr. Simpson, would you please state your name and tell us where you work and your title, please?
My name is Oscar J. Simpson. I'm a Senior Systems Administrator for the Reserve Air Transport Command.
Do you remember any events on October 23rd, 2001?
Oh, that was a weird night. Boy, I was coming to work there, and two planes almost crashed, one from the Reserve and one from RATCO, and I just wonder how they avoided the accident. It was weird.
When you arrived at work, did you take any action with regard to what you saw?
Well, actually, the people from Air Traffic Control called me up and said, what was wrong with the database? They had no information about planes coming in and out.
When you talk about the database, what database are you referring to?
Well, we have a database of all the flights that are coming in and out of the airport so that the air traffic controllers know when they have to be on the stand.
And where is this database stored?
We have it stored in the tower computer, and we keep track of it so that, and we do it a daily update to make sure it's current.
And is this tower computer protected in any way from hostile traffic?
Well, we use the DOD banners, you know, that the Department of Justice recommended several years ago, and then we have the standard login with names and passwords, and we try to use at least an 8-position password with letters and numbers.
And is there a firewall involved with the tower?
Yes, we do have a firewall. It's called Guardian, and we use passwords and banner on that as well.
Sir, let's continue with your description of what happened on the 23rd Avenue. You witnessed this, I'm sure, traumatic experience. What action did you take when you did it?
Well, after the people complained there was something wrong with the database, the first thing I did was restore the database with the information that we had from the morning run. And then I was checking all the logs, and I went back to make sure it was working. And I found out that my restore didn't work, so I tried it again.
What did you notice? Did you look at the database to see what was happening?
No, it was easier to find the mistake, so I just restored it. But the second time that I restored it didn't work, I started looking at some other things. And found that it kept removing the RATCO or anything that had RATCOM in it.
Okay. So, if I understand you correctly, any records in the database that had the phrase or the characters RATCO ended up getting deleted?
It seemed to disappear, didn't know why, and it seemed to be doing it on a periodic basis, like maybe every half hour or so.
Okay. Having discovered that, did you do anything else in your investigation?
I started taking a look at some of the logs to figure out exactly what was going on. I took a look at the cron logs to figure out, and everything seemed to look normal. I took a look at some of the firewalls, and everything there seemed to look normal.
Okay. Can I show you exhibit number 2? Or is it B? Now, do you recognize this?
Yes, that looks like our log.
Can you explain to me what the D's mean in that log?
That's our command to delete the record, as if the flight has been removed from our group for the day.
Do you recognize this?
That was from our flight line database. It just looked like a normal setup.
Did you take a look at the logs from your Guardian firewall?
Yes. When I took a look at it, it was on the firewall. I found an odd entry in there, IP address
140.30.33.15. You say it's an odd address. Why is it odd?
Pretty much since we're, a nice federal computer, we pretty much know what everybody's doing. And this was a strange one. We had a single entry, and it wasn't something that we had seen before. All the other IP addresses were normal duty business places.
If I can draw your attention to Exhibit C. Can you see that, Mr.
Yes.
Tell the ladies and gentlemen of the jury what this is.
Basically, that is a file saying what we should be doing. When we go through the file, we're basically taking a look at delete the flight line where the flight says RATCO. That's basically an SQL command trying to clean off a database. But in doing the process of deleting the database, it took away RATCOM records as well.
Let's go to the next exhibit, if you could, please. To help speed things along, I will tell you that this is something known as bastion.log. Is this the records from the firewall Guardian?
Yes, sir.
Can you explain to us a little bit about what this is showing?
Basically, we're going through the firewall here, and we're telling people exactly what's coming in. We have permit or deny access. We're telling people when something was coming in, when something was going out. And we're just basically telling people what is happening with the direction or the flow of information through the firewall.
Can I direct your attention to the entry here on Bastion of October 23rd at 2209?
Okay, it basically allowed somebody to come into the system but using a proxy.
Did you see the IP address there, sir?
Ah, yes, that's our weird one. 140.30.33.15.
Just so you know, just like in real court, they use PowerPoint and laser pointers. I just wanted to go ahead and point that out. They do that all the time. And they put all of their evidence inside of PowerPoint slides. Okay? Sorry. Carry on.
Sir, I think you testified earlier the tower kept track of logins to that particular server. Did you check any of the records to show logins to tower?
Later on, I checked it. One of the records I came up with was me.
Can you take a look at the next exhibit, sir?
Come on. I think you want Pam. Okay, what are we looking at? What I noticed here is I was logged on when I was actually driving past the airport watching the almost crash.
Okay. So, sir, are you telling us that this entry right here reflects a logon on your account?
Yes, sir. And it couldn't have been me because I always log off when I'm not at work.
At that point, did you call in law enforcement?
At that point, I called the OSI. I talked to a special agent, Kornblum, and asked him to come help me because somebody had done something, and I didn't want to get blamed.
Did you provide any records to me?
Yes, I gave him copies of the log.
That included copies of the bastard?
Copies of every log. And then he wasn't happy. He wanted it reduced a little bit. We had 4.5 feet of paper.
Okay, so you're saying you gave him redacted logs from Baskin?
Yes, sir.
And how did you redact the logs?
Basically used an editor and reduced it in accordance to what he thought would be prevalent for the court case.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Can I go now?
No.
Ms. Grant, I can't breathe.
Ah.
You're cross.
Mr. Simpson, good afternoon.
Hi.
I'm the defense attorney for Mr. Martin, Mr. Simpson, and I'm going to ask you some questions. I'm going to ask you to listen to my questions and to answer them. Do you understand?
Yes, you did that to Richard, too, didn't you?
Now, yes, I did. Now, Mr. Simpson, is it true that the only way to access Tower is through Guardian?
No, when you're on the system, you can go directly as well. But you have to be inside the airport, inside the facility.
So accessing Tower, if you're outside of the facility, do you need to go through Guardian to get to Tower?
That is correct.
Okay. Now, you indicated on your direct testimony that the IP address 140.30.33.15 was anomalous. Is that correct?
Yes, ma'am.
And that's because that IP address is not one that is authorized to log into Tower?
Well, it's not that it's not authorized. No one's ever come from that address before, so we just don't, we tend to recognize our friends and neighbors.
And you're familiar with the IP addresses of the people who are your friends and neighbors?
Oh, of course. It's easier to check the logs that way.
And you made no effort to block IP addresses that were not your friends and neighbors from connecting to Tower, did you?
No, because we use login and passwords. And we also have the banner.
Well, let me ask you about the... Let me ask you about the passwords. You don't use any kind of security measures to keep your passwords secure, do you?
We use a standard password package.
What kind of security measures did you take to keep your personal password secure?
I don't let people know it.
Do you write it down on a sticky note and stick it to the monitor of your computer?
Oh, I would never consider doing that.
Mr. Simpson, what was your password at the time of these intrusions?
Capital M, 0, small r, 3, B, 3, E, R.
And Mr. Simpson, isn't it true that you're a notorious lover of beer?
Yes.
No further questions.
Enjoy, Your Honor.
Okay. What we're going to do at this point is we're going to pick up with a witness already in progress, save time, thank you, Judge, so that we can get to the partying. Oh, that's good stuff. So we'll just kind of jump right into the chase there.
OSI, Air Force Office of Special Investigation Agent Jesse Kornblum, thank you very much for sharing with the jury your very impressive technical credentials and forensics capabilities. I have a few questions for you.
Richard, I hate to interrupt just for a second, but I'm going to have to ask the jury to try to keep the trips over to the bar to a minimum, okay? Thank you. Carry on.
If you okay, leave, you're guilty, right? That's...
Yeah, we bring in the alternate.
Yes, bring in the alternate.
Yeah, just go ahead. Yep. Come over here.
Can you tell us, sir, how you became involved in this case?
I received a call from the OSI Operations Center earlier in the morning of the 24th of October of last year. That call told me that there was a possible computer intrusion at one of the computers at Springfield International Airport.
Did you investigate this?
Yes, that morning we went to Springfield International Airport and talked to the system administrator, Mr. Simpson. Mr. Simpson provided us copies of the relevant portions of log files related to the intrusion. Those log files indicated, starting with the Bastion file, a telnet session that commenced at 10:10 the previous evening on the 23rd, excuse me, and finished at 10:57 that same evening. We were able to trace
the telnet session into what computer?
Telnet session through the Guardian system into Tower. We took the IP address from that connection and traced it back using a Whois service. The IP address belonged to a Speed Bump Communications Systems Incorporated, who we then contacted regarding those that regarding that IP address.
What's
Speed Bump's records indicated that the IP address was allocated to a Mr. Brian Martin, beginning at 8 p.m. on the evening of October 23rd and releasing at 9 a.m. on the morning of October 24th.
Thank you, sir. Did you also take a look at any records regarding phone connections from that address into...
Yes, we did. We contacted the local phone company, Verizon, and obtained the phone records from Speed Bump Communications, incoming calls to there. The calls indicated a telephone call from those times from a Mr. Brian Martin of 123 Tree Street in Baltimore, Maryland. We then correlated that against records from Speed Bump Communications of a customer of theirs, Mr. Brian Martin, who lived at 123 Tree Street in Baltimore, Maryland.
Agent, did you have a chance to take a look at any of the scripts that Mr. Simpson provided you?
Yes, we did. The one script regarding, we took a look at two scripts. First, the cron job, which calls a flight configuration update file every half hour, 15 and 45 minutes past the hour. Inside of that script, it contains a, let me see if I can find the exhibit here, contains a comment. That comment reads, roadblock owns you, and then contains a command to delete all flights from the flight database that contain the letters capital R-A-T-C-O.
Agent, is what we're showing on the screen?
Yes, it is, about halfway down, beginning with a pound sign, roadblock owns you.
All right. So is your testimony that the system automatically runs this script every 30 minutes?
Yes, that is correct.
And the effect of that would be what?
The effect of this script in that it would delete all flights from the flight database containing the letters RATCO. That would be any flights for RATCO or for RATCOM.
Agent, did you involve any other law enforcement in your investigation?
Yes. Once we realized that Mr. Brian Martin, living at 123 Tree Street in Baltimore, Maryland, was probably not a military member, we had to turn jurisdiction of the case over to the Federal Bureau of Investigation in accordance with our regulations.
Thank you.
Hey, that's my job.
Agent Kornbluth.
Bloom.
Agent Kornbluth. Thank you. Sorry about that. When you reviewed Speed Bump's records, did those indicate to you that they owned a block of IP addresses that started with the numbers 140.30?
Yes, they did.
Okay. So any IP address that starts with 140.30, the next two numbers are also Speed Bump IP addresses.
Correct.
And Speed Bump indicated to you that Mr. Martin used the IP address 140.30.33.15.
Correct, yes.
No other IP addresses were used by Mr. Martin, were they?
Not during that time period, no.
And that time period was the day of October 23rd?
From 8 p.m. on October 23rd until the next morning, yes.
Now, when Speed Bump says that this was Mr. Martin who was using this IP, what that really means is that this is Mr. Martin's account that is assigned that IP. Is that correct?
Yes.
And isn't it true that anyone who has access to that account can be the person who's using that IP?
They'd have to have the username and password from that account, and in this case, they'd have to be calling from his phone as well.
Okay. Now, you're not familiar with how many people live at Mr. Martin's house, are you?
I was present during the search warrant, and Mr. Martin was the only occupant of the house.
But you don't know how many people live there?
No.
And you don't know how many people Mr. Martin may have given his account name and password to?
Correct.
So it's possible that somebody using that account name and password at Mr. Martin's house could be using this account?
That would be possible.
Now, you have no information from the phone company about any other calls from Mr. Martin's house to the ISP that day, do you?
Correct.
When we look at this exhibit that we have on the board here, whoever wrote this program could write that comment. Is that correct? So who? Oh, I'm sorry. This is the speech. Could we go to the script, please? Thank you. So when we see this notation, Roadblock owns you, whoever wrote this program inserts that comment in the script. Is that correct?
Well, the script was written, according to Mr. Simpson, by Mr. Simpson, and he says that somebody else inserted these two lines into the script.
Okay. And the person who inserted those lines is not necessarily Roadblock, is it?
Correct.
Anybody could put the name Roadblock in there.
Whoever inserted these two lines inserted that Roadblock comment as well.
Now, when you reviewed the Bastion logs, there were entries in the Bastion log from other Speed Bump IP addresses, weren't there?
Yes.
And that was during the day of October 23rd?
Yes.
Those IP addresses were not traced to Mr. Martin, were they?
No.
And you have no logs from the ISP saying what connections were made from Speed Bump to other computers by Mr. Martin's account, do you?
In accordance with Speed Bump's own practices, those logs were only retained for 30 days. Unfortunately, it took longer than that for us to go to contact Speed Bump to get those records.
My question is, you don't have any information from the ISP that indicates that Mr. Martin's account connected to Tower, do you?
The tower logs indicate Mr. Martin's IP address is there. However, there are no logs directly from Speed Bump itself.
So, agent, you have no information from the ISP that connects Mr. Martin to Tower, do you?
Those logs were not retained.
You don't have those logs?
No.
No one has those logs. Now, there was no, the way that from your review indicated that the way that the tower computer was accessed was using Mr. Simpson's account and password.
Correct.
And you have no information that Mr. Martin knew Mr. Simpson's password, do you?
No.
Now, let me ask you about a little bit about the Bastion log. That log that you received was a redacted portion. Is that correct?
That's correct. The entire log was quite lengthy.
And that portion is redacted using an editing program?
Yes. Mr. Simpson redacted the program while I was present.
So it is possible to edit these logs?
It is possible, yes.
I have no further questions. Thank you.
Salgado, would you like to redirect?
One question, Agent, when you executed the search warrant at 1-2-3, Tree Street in Baltimore, Maryland. Is there any sign that any other person lived at that residence?
No.
Is there any sign that there were children at that residence?
No.
No more questions.
Recross?
Yes.
Agent, when you executed the search warrant, you adhered to the terms of the search warrant, did you not?
That is correct.
And the search warrant gave you authority to seize the computer.
Yes, along with any documents, manuals, passwords, or other instructions for the computer.
The search warrant didn't give you authority to search the bedrooms, did it?
We did do a cursory search of the bedrooms to see if there were any books or manuals in those places.
And there was more than one bedroom, was there not?
There were two bedrooms in the apartment. However, there was only one bed.
Okay, that covers it.
You don't know whether Mr. Martin has a partner or partners that he may share the bed with, do you?
Mr. Martin refused to answer all questions during the warrant.
Thank you.
Just a quick comment. We did have someone hand Caitlin here, our bailiff. By the way, she's 8 years old, the youngest person ever to be an official Black Hat attendee. We had someone point out that the exact SQL syntax used in there was incorrect. And we'd like to thank you wholeheartedly for your anal retentiveness. We're sorry. Everyone's working very, very hard. You had both Carol and John who worked feverishly creating this wonderful presentation. And so if an asterisk got left out, we're too damn bad, okay? But nonetheless, you're paying attention, and we do appreciate that. Also, before we just so you guys know, normally you would also have Speed Bump Communications involved in this. You'd have Verizon involved in this, and just for the sake of moving things along, basically everything that they pretty much said here was confirmed by them, and it was more or less agreed to by everyone. And he did his oppressor thing, and she did her free the slave thing, So it was working out, okay? So we're going to continue to press on because we know we've got lots of parties and stuff to attend to later on.
Yes. Hey, Ms. Delgado.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to call Don Cavender to the stand, please. Mr. Cavender, would you tell the fine members of the jury who you are and what you're doing?
I'm Special Agent Donald L. Cavender of the Federal Bureau of Investigation.
Dun, dun, dun.
Were you involved in the investigation related to this case?
Yes, I was.
Could you describe how you were involved?
Yes, Special Agent Kornblum of the Air Force OSI referred this case to me. We worked together and prepared an affidavit for a search warrant of 123 Tree Street in Springfield, Maryland. Baltimore.
Were you there for the execution of that warrant?
Yes, I was.
Right. Can you tell us the results of what you found?
Yes. Yes, I can.
That's from last year.
Yes, I can. We entered the residence at 5 a.m. and found Mr. Martin passed out on the floor. We informed him that we had a search warrant for the residence. He recommended we attempt some sexual positions that sounded uncomfortable to me. And asked to speak to his attorney. We then searched the residence. We seized one computer, namely an e-machine running Windows ME.
Oh,
Man, that's low, okay? I mean, I'm sorry. I know we're, you know, doing a mock-up here, but that's low, dude.
It's 67 floppy disks as well. Numerous computer manuals, notes, and miscellaneous items.
Can you tell us what you found on the disks and hard drives?
Yes, I did a examination of the hard drive. I created a bitstream image of that as well as the floppy disks, analyzed those, and found, among the things that I found, were four files relating to access to a computer system, to a computer network that did not belong to Mr. Martin. Those files were a password file, a shadow file, and two files related to a password cracker known as John the Ripper.
Did you find John the Ripper on the drive as well?
Yes, John the Ripper was on the drive. There were a couple other things on the drive. There were two sniffers, some sniffer logs, some IRC logs, and some files that were results of port scans.
All right. Now, Agent, we earlier saw a password file that Mr. Thames testified to. Is that one of the password files that were on the machine?
Yes, it was.
And now let's talk about the IRC logs. What did you find on the machine by way of IRC?
I found two IRC logs, one dated October 22nd at 21:45, and in this IRC log, an individual by the using the nick or nickname of R Block is having conversation with various people, to include one person named Squiddo. And in it, R Block talks about how things have not been going well at work, that asshole Richard fired me and did not give his last paycheck. Squiddo goes on to say, well, isn't that illegal? And I can go ahead and read from the log. R Block, he claims I didn't give back the fucking emergency pager, even though I gave it to his secretary. Bitch lost it or something. Excuse me. I'm sorry. These are not my words. I'm reading from Squiddo. Isn't there something you can do? R Block, not like the courts will believe me. Everyone would believe a big company over me. Squiddo, why did he fire you anyways? R Block, I was bored. Port scanning some systems to see what was running. Nothing bad or anything. R Block, didn't give me warning. Just canned me the same day. Squiddo, lame, with a emoticon indicating a frowny face. R Block, yeah, he'll pay for it one way or another. R Block, AFK, BRB, which would be interpreted as, what is it?
Away
from keyboard, be right back. Thank you. Members of the jury who spend way too much time on IRC. R Block, Richard knows Jack about security, never gave us time to fix the network. R Block, he's still running vulnerable CGIs on the Apache server, still has a few vulnerable RPC servers and that are net accessible. R Block, he's just begging to get hacked. Hint, cough. Then Granthor comes in and I'm having a hard time making out the rest of it.
All right, well, then let's just leave it at that. You said, sir, that there was a second log that you found on the machine.
There's a second log that I found dated October 25th at 11:00:15. In that one, our block is again talking with Squiddo. Our block says, Richard, ex-block boss dickhead, mysteriously got hacked with a emoticon with a furrowed brow and smiley face. Squiddo, tell me you didn't. Our block, I didn't. Stalking didn't what? Squiddo, why don't I believe you? Our block, with an arrow indicating himself, innocent, he, he, he. Our block, I just heard through the grapevine old Richard ran into a lot of problems. Apparently one of his servers ran into problems, or so I hear.
Thank you.
Now, Agent, the passwords that you found were not passwords for the Springfield International Airport, were they?
No, they weren't.
And they were not passwords to Tower?
No, they were not passwords.
And they were not passwords to Guardian?
No, they were not passwords to Guardian.
And those passwords did not include Mr. Simpson's password, did they?
No, they did not.
Now, on those password files, those files were undated, were they not?
I believe that there were dates associated with those files.
You don't know what dates those programs were stored on Mr. Martin's computer, do you?
There were, of course, creation modified dates.
My question is, do you know what dates those programs were stored on Mr. Martin's computer?
Well, the modified date might
My question
be
is,
to...
do you know what date those programs were stored on Mr. Martin's computers? Yes or no?
No, I do not.
Thank you. Now, you talked about finding two IRC logs on Mr. Martin's computer, but isn't it true that you actually found three IRC?
That's correct. There was a third IRC log.
Okay, and we'll talk about that third one in a minute, but first I want to talk about the first one, and if we could see the exhibit called IRC Threat, please. Okay, thank you. Now, this was dated October 22nd, is that correct?
That's correct.
And this was this came from while Mr. Martin was logged into the speed bump ISP, according to Speed Bump's records, is that correct?
Correct.
Now, in this chat, you are seeing some people talking here, but isn't it true that there are potentially more people on this IRC channel than who are participating in this particular conversation?
That's correct.
And from this, you don't know who else may be on the channel listening in on this conversation, do you?
No, there was no indication on the system as to who was logged into that channel at that time.
So it is possible that somebody by the nickname of Primate could have been listening in on this channel at this time.
There's no indication that Primate was logged onto the channel.
Is it possible, Agent, that a person by the name of Primate was logged into this channel at this time?
It would be possible.
Thank you. Now, this chat that you read from, in it, our block indicates that he's angry with Mr. Thieme and that he's talking about vulnerabilities in the Ratco servers, is he not?
That's correct.
Okay. And this case isn't about hacking into Ratco servers, is it?
Were there charges that included the Ratco?
The question is...
Okay.
The case Believe it or not, we're that well rehearsed.
There were not charged. Okay. Mm-hmm. We cut out those charges.
There are no charges before the jury today that have to do with RATCO servers, do they?
That is correct.
The question is about the RATCOM servers, Tower and Guardian.
Yes.
And there's nothing about RATCOM, Tower, or a Guardian in this chat.
Not included in this chat.
Okay. Now, Now, if I could see the exhibit IRC conflict, please. Now, do you recognize this as something that you found on Mr. Martin's computer?
Yes, I do.
And would it be fair to characterize this as an argument between primate and R block?
That's what it appears to be.
And in this argument, does, if you could read just five lines up from the bottom, if you could read what, I'll just direct the jury's attention to it, given the audience. Your Honor, at this point, I'd like to just offer this exhibit to the jury as evidence so that the agent doesn't have to read it into the record.
No matter how much he enjoys reading dirty words.
Yes, accepted.
Thank you. So,
jury will read this by themselves.
Thank you. And this chat is dated prior to all of this incident involving the Springfield Airport, isn't it?
That's correct. It was dated June 18th of 2001.
Okay. So, and this indicates that Mr. Martin and whose roadblock and primate had a rather antagonistic and contentious relationship in which Primate threatened to own you hard. Is that correct?
Yes.
Thank you. Now, okay, thank you, Agent. I have no further questions.
Mr. Salgado, redirect.
Agent, when you were answering the line of questions from counsel for the defendant, there were some questions about the time on the password files on the system.
Correct.
And I'd love it if you would tell the jury what you were trying to say about that.
I noticed that on the password file and on the shadow file that there was a creation and a last modified date that was September 9th of 2001. And then the last access date on those files was November 25th of 2001.
So the create and modify dates predated the incident at Tower, and the last time the file was accessed was after that.
Correct. And then also the files related to John the Ripper that contained the cracked passwords were created, modified, and last accessed all on November 25th of 2001.
All after the date of his termination as specified in the order.
Correct.
Thank you. No more questions. Your Honor, I have no more witnesses.
Thank you, Mr. Salgado.
Just while we're getting set up here, I just want to point out that it is customary for pictures to be taken, trophy pictures, during a search and seizure. So if you're thinking about doing something stupid, you too can end up in a PowerPoint slide in a court of law.
Ms. Granick, does the defense have any witnesses?
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. I would like to call John Klein to the stand. Thank you.
And he's sworn in and all that.
And qualified as an expert, please.
I'm just not sure what of.
Okay. Mr. Klein, you're a security expert, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
And is it a security administrator's responsibility to be concerned with the security of passwords?
Absolutely.
Can you explain a little bit to the jury what that means?
Well, as a security administrator, you'd be interested in the efficacy of your passwords to make sure that your users were choosing good passwords. Because if you had weak passwords on the system, you might have to worry about a compromise.
Okay, and what is a weak password? Is that a password that's easy to guess?
Something that's easily guessable, something well known to the individual, something in a dictionary, something that somebody could guess fairly quickly.
Are there tools out there that help a security administrator learn whether the passwords are insecure and easy to guess?
Yes, there are.
Okay, and what are those tools? What are some of those tools?
Well, a couple of the more common ones would be something like John the Ripper or Crack.
Okay, and this program, John the Ripper, that was found on Mr. Martin's machine.
Yes, it was.
And is that a common tool for someone who works in security to have?
If I were looking to test passwords to make sure that they were strong, I might use something like John the Ripper or Crack.
Okay. So security administrators often will use John the Ripper.
Yes.
Do you have that program?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Now, when a person is a security administrator, is it common for them to have access to the password file for the systems that they're responsible for?
Most of the time, yes.
Okay. And did you have the opportunity to review bastion.log, the file from Guardian that indicates that we've been talking about today that indicates the connections through that machine to Tower?
Yes, I did.
Okay. And when you reviewed that log, did you find anything in terms of IP address connecting from IP addresses other than the friends and neighbors of the Department of Defense and Mr. Martin?
Yes, I did. I found 19 additional connections during that day from IP addresses from the speed bump network.
Okay. So there were a total of 20 connections, and of those connections, only one was Mr. Martin's IP address?
Yes, it was.
And the other IP addresses came from speed bump?
Yes, they did.
Now, when a person is logged into IRC, is it possible for other IRC users to learn what IP address they're logging in with?
Yes, they could.
Now, let me ask you whether it's possible for a log like Bastion to be modified.
Just like any other file in a Unix system, yes, it could be modified.
Okay. And can you tell me just an example of how somebody could modify a log like the Bastion log?
Somebody could use an editor and go in and alter IP addresses, alter entries, shilling services. In the case of
let me just make sure. Could we have the Bastion log up there? Okay, while we're doing that, let me ask you. Did you have the opportunity to examine the Bastion log as a part of this case?
Yes, I did.
And while you were examining the log, did you find anything that led you to believe that the Bastion log had been modified?
Yes, I did.
Okay. And what did you find that led you to believe that?
If you'll notice the line here at 2247 hours, you will notice at the end of the entry a colon WQ followed by a blank line. That would not be common in a firewall entry.
Okay. What does that indicate to you?
That indicates that somebody had entered the log file either using the VI editor or thought they were using the VI editor, had attempted to modify text because they must have been in text insert mode, forgot to hit escape to get them out of text insert mode, typed WQ return thinking they were saving and quitting the file when in fact they left that text behind.
Now, when the log is in the editor, is it possible to alter the IP addresses that the log reflects?
once you're in the editor, you can alter anything in the log.
So someone with the editor could put Mr. Martin's IP address into the log.
That is possible.
Or even create entirely false log entries.
That is possible.
I have no further questions. Thank you.
Dun, 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 dun.
Mr. Salgado, would you like to cross?
Thank you, Your Honor. Sir, have you testified as an expert witness in criminal trials before?
Yes, I have.
And how many?
Four previous trials.
How many times did you testify for the defense?
All four times.
So you've never testified for the prosecution or for law enforcement or anything?
No, sir. I never worked for the evil empire.
I never thought it was true.
Strike it.
Sir, have you ever testified in civil cases?
Yes, I have.
How many times were the defense there?
All the times.
Never for the plaintiff.
Never for the plaintiff.
Sir, how much were you paid for the testimony today?
$5,000.
Everyone.
Cha-ching.
Now you know where the real money comes.
Sir, you testified that system administrators may somewhat frequently use a tool such as John Ripper to test the strength of the passwords the users are using?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Why is it that they would use something like John Ripper?
Well, normally in a Unix password, you have a one-way, it's called a one-way encryption, so that you can't look at what the original password was. So you use tools such as John the Ripper or Crack to attempt to guess what the passwords are to see if they are strong.
Is it possible that one of the reasons that this is a tool commonly used by security folks is because it is also the tool that folks who want to breach the security would use?
That's very possible, yes.
Sir, did any of the other speed bump IP connections in the Guardian actually translate into logins into Tower?
Through my examination, I was unable to determine that any additional logins did occur.
Right. So for the $5,000 worth of analysis that you did, you could not identify any of these speed bump IP addresses turning into actual logins into Tower?
That is correct.
Do you recall, sir, that Mr. Simpson testified that at one point he actually edited the Bastion log?
Yes, I do remember him testifying to that fact.
Is it consistent, sir, that if he edited that log, that he may very well have, not being perhaps familiar with what particular editor he was using, it included WQ in the center?
Not very likely, sir. If he were looking to pare down the log for the government, he would have been deleting lines rather than inserting text.
Okay. But it's possible, is it not, that being in the editor mode, it may have been that he typed those characters in?
It is possible that he did fat finger and edited those
possible
characters.
Thank
yes,
you,
sir.
That's all. Thank you.
Ms. Granick, do you want to redirect?
No redirect. Thank you.
I've got a quick comment. Caitlin's been hard at work. We got another anal retentive member of the audience who has pointed out that the one resident at 123 Tree Street, Baltimore, Maryland, was, of course, Brian Martin, but in the picture, there were extra people in there that looked like they were being arrested. In fact, there was a couple of extra people. That is simply because the FBI, when they were doing their search, they were playing around while they were taking the pictures. Okay? Yeah, as they always do.
Thank you, Mr. Nomad. Ms. Granick?
Your Honor, if I can have a moment to converse with my client for a second.
Just a moment.
I don't think you should testify. I think that we're fine.
I'll prove him wrong. It's easy. Come on, let me on.
As your attorney, I advise you that it's a bad idea for you to testify in this case.
Let me on the stand, damn it. I can prove him wrong. You don't have a choice here.
Well, Your Honor, my client wants to testify, and it's the defendant's right to testify regardless of his attorney's advice. So the next witness I will call will be Mr. Brian Martin.
Yes. Mr. Martin, you understand what you're up to here?
Yes, ma'am.
All right, proceed.
Just so you know, this is the part where Brian manages to get his foot into his mouth shove his head up his butt, and then somehow shoot himself in that foot.
A truly amazing, amazing
talent. Damn, I'm good.
Yes.
Now, Mr. Martin, it's true that when you were fired, you were upset with Mr. Theme, is it not?
Originally, yes, but like him, I forgave him.
And you have no grudge against Mr. Theme now?
No, I finally got my last paycheck.
And in fact, you have a new job now that you're very happy with?
Yes.
Now, you have no grudge against RATCOM, do you?
Oh, not at all.
And no grudge against the Springfield Airport?
No. Well, they did lose the bag one time, but, you know.
As the security administrator for RATCO, did you have access to their passwords?
Yes, that was required for my job.
Okay. And you, let me ask you about Primate. There's an individual that you've been that we've seen these IRC chats called Primate, who you've had some online discussions with. Is that right?
That's putting it nicely. Yeah, he's an asshole.
Could you tell us a little bit more about Primate and his interactions with you online?
Well, he's always hostile. No matter what you say, he's always got to be right. He's always trying to prove that he knows something about security, even though he works at McDonald's.
And what's Primate's feeling specifically about you?
He doesn't quite like me at all. If I was dead, he'd be happy.
So, and is this...
It's not customary, by the way, for defense attorneys to giggle at their own